Okay, we have three talks by three youngsters in our program.
Four?
Oh, who's the four? Oh, I forgot. Okay, four, sorry. My sincere apologies. Bhupendra, would you like to, again, just briefly introduce yourself?
I'm Bhupendra Mishra. I'm a final year graduate student at Nicholas Copernicus Astronomical Center, Berlin. So I'm mainly working with Professor Vlodek Luzniak and Dr. Chris Fragel from College of Charleston. He's here for a T-cert here. So I mostly worked on GRMHD simulations of thin accretion disks and QPOs. So I mainly talk about thin disks. If you're interested, I will also talk about QPOs. The circulation neural model is that there are three regions, the inner region, which is radiation pressure dominated, and the B region, which is gas pressure dominated, and C, which is again gas pressure dominated, but the free field absorption dominates. The good thing about this model, it gives a viscosity prescription, which is alpha, and there was lots of debate what actually is the pressure here. It's total pressure. It was confirmed, I believe, in this Hiroshi's paper in 2009. So I will start from MHD simulations, and then I will go to the viscous simulations, which are hydro, which are intended to do a more parameter-based study to reduce the computational time.
How do you pronounce that?
Oh yeah, so
in your face.
So this is general relativistic radiative magneto-hydrodynamical simulations. These are the global simulations. You can put one more R if you include resistivity. So, yeah.
That's the next step, right?
So, you have seen this equilibrium curve many times, but here I'm plotting just for circulation neural model, which is geometrically thin disks. So, the horizontal branch here is the unstable branch. The radiation pressure dominates over the gas pressure, and the lower branch here is the stable branch where the gas pressure dominates. So this is at a radius of 10 black hole mass units for a 6.62 solar mass black hole, and the alpha here is chosen from the MHD simulations which we did for this thin disk simulations, and these blue dots are the evolution of the three-dimensional simulation. The MHD simulation. So initially it was started from this small dot, and it started to cool down and it collapses to a very thin disk due to thermal instability. So this is how the disk collapses. So this is a three-dimensional setup in just 90 degree along azimuthal in cylindrical coordinate system. We did not go the entire 2π because it was already about 3 million CPOs for almost one simulation. So this ran for 40 ISCO orbital periods. And you see initially when, so this arrow tells initial height of the disk, and once the magnetorotational instability develops, it heats up and it starts to expand, but soon the cooling dominates over the heating and the disk collapses. See that the box size is pretty small here. It's just from 4 gravitational radii to 40 gravitational radii. And the vertical domain here is from minus 8 gravitational radii to plus 8. So this is a very small simulation, but we hope to do the bigger one and with higher resolution. Here the radial grid has 192 cells logarithmically spaced. The vertical one has 160. The azimuthal one has 64 uniform grids. This was just not one simulation. We did total four simulations to confirm that this is not some numerical artifact. And there was one low resolution simulation to make sure that the disk collapse happens in the low, and also we see it in the high resolution, so it's not due to resolution. Because a lack of resolution can have a lack of heating. The MRI is not a jar. So the disc might collapse if you don't have sufficient heating. And then we did two similar gas pressure dominated simulations. So the gas pressure dominated simulation is supposed to be stable and it remains stable. So this confirms that this simulation is collapsing due to thermal instability. And this is just a quick diagnostic here. This is time, the simulation run time here. This is a cylindrical radius, and this tells the height of the disk. And this one is the local Keplerian orbiting period. So the MRI starts to develop at that time, and the disk starts to heat up. But soon it's cooling dominated and collapses. So the region here is collapsing much earlier here than here, because the MRI is not resolved at a very outer region. The right panel here is the vertical profile of the density, which is radially averaged for 20 gravitational radii. And this is telling the photosphere. So you see that the disk at the end has collapsed to a very high density, thin disk. And to make sure that how the cooling and heating behaves, this is the ratio of heating rate to the cooling rate. And the region where the disk is collapsing, it's the cooling dominated. So that's why it collapses. But there is something happening after the disk collapsed here, and the heating is starting to come up into balance. But the disk is not resolved anymore, so we cannot believe what is happening after the collapse.
Can I ask what radiation scheme?
Oh yeah, so sorry, that's just explain it. So this is Hammond closure scheme. Which is M1 closure scheme, which is actually the satisfying Eddington approximation in the radius and rest frame.
Have you thought about running the simulations initially without cooling to have a fully developed state and then slowly turn on the cooling to avoid this overcooling before the turbulence develops?
We didn't try that. If there is a heating, and if you don't turn off the cooling, it will start expanding.
Mm-hmm.
So we do need a cooling. Now I'll switch to some simple equations. I promise these are the only equations I will show. So this is a diffusion equation. I think you are familiar from this diffusion equation. So if you just do a bit of algebra and substitute sigma as mu here and put it in this equation, and finally you get this diffusion coefficient, which is del mu or del sigma. So if this is diffusion coefficient is, if it's positive, it will be diffusing and the matter will start to accrete onto the black hole. And this is a plot I borrowed from the Frank and Ray accretion power book. But what if it's a negative? Actually, it will start to accumulate the matter into the high density regions from the low density regions, and this starts to give the ring formation in the inner region. So this is one of the interesting thing from these simulations. And here it's a player. So this is the same radiation pressure dominated simulation. I just reflected it to show it intact, to azimuthal view here, to show the complete ring. So there's a clear formation of ring in the inner region, which is happening at the 7 gravitational radii. And we believe that this is due to the viscous instability.
Is this the same region that has rage? Well, it's got rage.
So the similar equation about the diffusion coefficient, I tried to plot the surface density here with the vertically integrated tau. And since they are anti-correlated, then it will be a viscous instability. So here it's a low tau and the high surface density. And then there is a low surface density and there is a high tau. So, and this is actually the radius where it starts to form the ring. And this viscous instability develops at a Lightman-Ardel time, which is expected for development of the viscous instability at this particular time. So there are two clear evidences that this could be a viscous instability, but we need to make sure from further simulations, and that's why now we are doing the viscous simulations.
What would be the temperature behavior for the temperature in this region?
So the temperature is around 10 to the power 7 Kelvin.
Because if it is viscously unstable, it should also be thermally unstable.
It is thermally unstable.
It is also thermally unstable, yeah. So that's the temperature increases as well.
So the temperature drops due to thermal instability, because the disk is cooling down. That's a good question, because I think except one of the simulations from Yangfei, I don't think there is any simulation which showed expanding disk. Most of the simulations are showing a collapsing disk. Is it true? No?
As far as I can tell, they're all collapsed.
Yeah, so
all of them. Which is a mystery to me.
That's also a mystery to me, actually, because if I go back to the very first plot here, so we have been trying that even if we put an initial setup somewhere here, still it starts to collapse. So this is something which is against the fundamental physics.
So you initialized it above the unstable branch?
No, this is actually below the unstable branch.
Right.
So that's why it collapses.
Right.
So that's why in the viscous simulations we are trying to put it somewhere here.
Yeah.
Or somewhere here. And still it collapses.
Yeah. Yangfei did run a sharing box simulation that was sort of, it's not his fault that he did this. It's our fault actually. To the right of the turn in that.
So
he did get a runaway in that case. That was the one time.
So thank you for that. We tried it actually.
Ah.
And the viscous simulations, not in MHD, because now we want to do a detailed parameter space study, so we switch to the viscous simulation in two-dimensional setups.
I thought just that you know you had it before. I have one terminological remark. You started the first slide with saying they are thin disks. They are certainly not thin disks. And you can take, I don't know, for example, Frank, take the brain, and you've taken it. I know that your supervisor probably still calls them thin disks, but they are not thin disks. And you can see a disk where with m dot is equal to 10, there's a basic formula, h over r is proportional, there's an order of one coefficient, that m dot, just a little m dot. So it means that at the inner edge of the disk, at m dot equal to 10, h over r is equal to 10.
But this m dot is actually the efficiency factor 0.1.
Don't call it a thin disk because it's very misleading. Thin disk is with h over r is of the order 1%. And
okay, so
and it's a question of terminology, simply because people who are not familiar with the field, they would, you know, I remember we talked about it for an hour. You were saying thin disk, and you meant thick disk, and we couldn't understand each other. So it's a question of terminology, it has no influence of your scientific results. It's simply, you know, it's a question of communication.
So it's a disk.
It's just
we can agree with that.
This disk are the thickness is dependent on the pressure of the mass transfer of the mass accretion rate. They are not, you don't keep them thin. You do nothing to keep them thin, so why do I call them thin?
Okay.
Sorry, just another stupid question. So this little m dot is in units of Eddington?
Yes, it's in Eddington units for the efficiency of 10.
It's Eddington with efficiency 0.1, right?
So it's globalized already. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it will be actually one.
One. So if the source has the energy of the velocity, the middle m dot is one.
One.
If the efficiency, of course, if the source is Eddington.
Mm-hmm. So it's 1.3 and 0.0001, yeah.
Before you move on, can I ask you maybe a detailed question about MHD? So this is a more generic question. Do we have an understanding, in these kind of GRMHD codes, how this turbulence actually heats? I know Yangfei's looked at this in great detail in shearing boxes, but the question then would be how the heating mechanism, the turbulence, scales with resolution. think the global runs will necessarily have less resolution. You may still be, in some sense, capturing the large-scale aspects of the turbulence and capturing the stresses, but missing some crucial aspects of dissipation physics. Is that possible?
It's not clear to me. So at the microscopic level, it's not clear to me.
Because whether you're thermally stable or not might be a somewhat delicate balance
of
not only the global heating, but global meaning integrated from the thickness of the disk, but where the heat is dissipated as a function of size scale. Imagine that. To balance that too.
Mm-hmm. I think the short answer, Chris, is that this has been very poorly explored. And in this regime, when your radiation pressure dominant, and Steve Ballas's point about grapple numbers being greater than unity rather than less than unity, all that stuff is coming into play here, and it's not been explored.
My principle resolution of studies should be done, but this is almost impossible due to having a lot of additional time.
But you could imagine setting up matched local simulations,
yeah,
these resolutions, and seeing that. And then you could extend
it. Actually, do a very cheap
explanation.
Can I ask a question as well, just
to
again, a more general one? So these are being done, these are GR and HD simulations, okay? So why? What's the significant difference that you find in your results versus going, for example, to a post-Newtonian approximation with a potential, like a Chomsky-Witten potential, things like that? I mean, are there big differences noted in terms of stresses, things like this? In which case, why go to the trouble?
The viscous instability is definitely being affected by the relativistic effects because the orbiting frequency is different. So it enhances the growth rate of the viscous instability. And the thermal instability.
Is it possible to do a good enough post-Newtonian approximation that you capture those elements?
I'm not sure how much so in radiative simulations because, maybe for the dynamics of matter. This post-Newtonian approximation could be good enough, but
yeah.
For radiation, there are significant differences.
Yes, okay. That's what I was thinking as well.
I would actually argue that it probably doesn't matter.
Right.
It depends on the questions that you're asking.
Right.
If you're concerned about launching well-collimated jets that are attacking the spin power of a black hole,
absolutely,
then you probably want to, like Sasha simulation, then you want to do it.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, GR is not possible.
No, I understand that. Okay.
But it's expensive.
Yeah. That
compared to the radiation?
True.
I
once you go to extra physics radiation, the extra cost of GR is
cannot
that.
That's fine.
Okay.
We're just impressed by GR not being hard.
GR is trivial. GR in a Kerr space-time is trivial because you have an analytic solution for the space-time. If you want to do real GR with a, you know, emerging neutron stars with all the plasma and time-dependent gravity, that's a whole other world. Is that problem solved?
No, because we keep on going. You step forward. What are you worried about? Discuss it and turbulence.
Yes.
It's a classical approach. If you don't know what to do with turbulence, you put general relativity or even, you know, why not alternative theory for that? Scalar tensor.
Okay, let's get back to the
Could you explain what symbols or size of symbols?
So the size of the symbols are telling the evolution of the simulation. It starts from smallest one, and then as the simulation grows, it's increasing in size. So these are the simulations mainly done by me and led by Chris Flagin and his student. So this is still ongoing work. The idea is to explore many of the viscous instability of the gravity.
So when you say size, do you mean just resolution?
The size of these points? No, I mean the size tells about the time evolution.
So the size of the actual marker.
Yeah, what is, what does that size exactly mean then?
So as you go further in time, you're increasing the size of the marker you're putting on that plot.
Oh, so the same colors correspond to a single simulation involving.
Yeah, so it tells that whether it's cooled down inside or not, right? So where does it move on the surface?
Okay.
So left one is the blue point. And the right one is the gain point. And you see in both cases it collapses. And the interesting thing is there are again these rings are starting to appear. So we are yet to explore that. This could be again the viscous instability. Excuse me?
Why is it turbulent when you're using a viscosity rather than magnetic fields?
But the viscosity alpha prescription will cause the turbulence.
Through convective motions? Is this convectively unstable? I would have expected it to be smooth.
Is it because, like, put another way, is why is it turbulent as opposed to laminar?
Yeah.
We saw the same for kids.
That's right.
And I was wondering, I mean, people have measured all the elements of the stress tensor, right, in MRI simulation. Like, why would you only have the R5 component on zero in a viscous simulation? That baffled me a bit. Because MRI turbulence is not isotropic, but it's not just, you know, that one entry in the.
I mean, in drones, this mentions we use all components of the viscosity. And
do you see something like?
No. Well, not for a straight up sort of fixed H over R disk.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
When we start to put in thermal instabilities and the like, and that drives.
So this
comes
by thermals. So is it happening locally as well as globally, in the sense that pockets of gas are getting colder?
Well, that's more just killing off all the other, because I asked Pratik about it last week, and he said that it was killing off all the additional components because you just wash out the small scale behaviors there, like hydrodynamic instabilities there.
But as soon as the stimulation is switched on, it gets into a highly turbulent state and then collapses down. I'm just interested what the origin of that turbulent state is, and it's presumably thermal. It's like the convective motions occurring because some regions of the fluid are getting much colder than the other regions, and therefore you generate buoyant blobs and unbuoyant blobs. Is that what's happening?
That would be my suspicion.
Yeah, you should check it.
What are the weird vertical stripes?
Which one?
Like you have these vertical gap, yeah, like
this
that.
One?
Yeah.
So that's what we think that this could be the viscous instability, that the matter is starting to accumulate into the rings and the disk breaks.
Are these 2D?
It's a 2D simulation.
And is that the same as true? Like towards the end of the simulation, in the really thin bit, you have to see that little.
This one?
Yeah.
So this is happening, something actually. So the radiation pressure starts to get too large at those points and it starts to expand up. So This is happening due to the increase of radiation pressure.
Sorry, this is, sorry, say again?
The increase in radiation pressure. So it just starts to puff up the disk on those regions.
Why specifically in those regions as opposed to?
That's something is not clear to me, actually, that why is it happening at that particular radius.
Is it fair to say you have the resolution limit?
So the scale height here is 0.03.
0.03?
Yeah. So it's 192, so 0.03 divided by 200, so approximately. So,
yeah.
I have to check that one.
Yeah.
And the right one is 0.001. So,
yeah.
I wouldn't say it's a thin disk, but it's. Yeah.
Okay.
This
is
oh, yeah.
Is that him? Okay. So, this took us half an hour for people, and I'm cognizant of the fact, especially when you're more junior, that spend all this time investing in preparing a presentation, and then if we don't have time to go through the presentation, you're going to have to go through all of the stress again when we ask you to do it again. And so I'm wondering, we might not be able to get through all four of you, but which of you would like to go next and get this over?
I have to go
with?
Because
you have to go.
Okay.
Okay.
No, 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 I don't trust that date, so.
Okay.
Okay. And I'll finish it early because I already did once.
Oh, that's fine. So I can be
bad.
That's
going to
be weird. That's fine. And if you're not stressed, then
you're not stressed. Your problem is
going to be stressed. Maybe. Okay. But it's okay. I sent
him the one. Don't be stressed. Oh, yeah. So much less complete. So good cover face.
Being able to be at the beach.
Let's go to the beach in D.C. They're expecting 10 to 6 inches next day.
Of rain.
Yes, so expect mudslides, expect all sorts of chaos, I'm afraid.
Yeah, there's plenty of.
Okay, I forgot to change the date, sorry for that. So, all set?
Go.
Hello, everyone. Myself, Ananda Deepika. Deepika is a better name. I really don't want to go to my last name. So I'm a second year PhD student at Nicholas Copernicus Astronomical Center, and I'm working with John Pelasota, Professor Hamire, and Rory Klusniak. So I'm working with studying this disk instability model in large accretion disk. And so how large? By large, I mean that the disk would extend up to like 10 to the power 12, a few factors of 10 to the power 12 centimeters. That's, yes, but protoplanetary, compared to protoplanetary disk, that's not large. But I think in comparison to CV disk, I think it's large. And because usually the simulations have been done so far for the CV disk extending up to like a few factors of 10 to 10 to 11 centimeters. And why would I like to do or deal with this large disk? Because we know that there are the systems with long orbital periods. And if we have such long orbital periods, then we would expect that the disk would extend up to large distances, at least up over the circularization, passing the circularization radius. So, and if that's the case, then the outer regions of the large disk would be cooler comparatively, and therefore they would, and the hotter the inside regions would be hotter. So therefore, there would be a region somewhere in between, which would be potential to for this thermal viscous instability, and. And one more important thing is that it's probably a bit tough to simulate the entire disk, like extending from 10 to the power 8 centimeters to 10 to the power 12 centimeters, and to study this transition of front. So that's what I'm doing.
Do you get the snow line? I just would winter is our friend. If you go
yes,
far, enough, you would get the snow.
Probably across the
line.
I think, but it's around 10 to 15 centimeters.
I was joking, but I mean, if you.
Yes.
It's 10 to the 14 if you go. It's.
I think it's 10 A, you probably right, if I remember from the talks correctly.
Something like that.
Okay. I was at so I'm sure that this S-curve has been presented quite a long time before the discussions in January. So to briefly touch upon, it's been well established by now that the disk instability model could explain the dwarf nova outburst. And the Stanin model has been proposed by a few of these pioneers in early 1970s and 80s. So, but it has been later, it was required to modify the standard model. Because and include certain other effects such as the irradiation from due to the secondary and the irradiation due to primary itself, and also some differences such as the due to the magnetic field of the white form, the disk has to be truncated, and some other modifications. So it kept on being modified over the past few years. So the basic. The basic idea about, behind this disk instability model is that if you have this, the opacity steeply depends upon the temperature. So when the hydrogen starts to ionize at around 10 to the power 4 Kelvin, then there is a steep rise in the opacity, which would lead to the imbalance in the between the cooling and the heating rate. So basically, once the disk tries to build up mass over the low branch of the S curve, the disk is in quiescence. And once the hydrogen starts to ionize at this particular temperature, there would be a steep rise in the opacity, leading to the imbalance in the cooling and heating rates. And then the temperature rises steeply, reaching the upper branch of the S curve, that's where the outburst starts. And thank you.
I didn't do that.
But this is a local phenomenon. This is at a particular radius. So what we, but we know. So once this starts at a particular radius, the fronts try to propagate based on where this originate. Like there are two types of fronts. Two types of outbursts, which is inside out and outside in. And basically, I think Professor Lasut has proved that in large disk, they would be mostly inside out outburst and no origin of outside and outburst. So I think that's because you would need a larger mass transfer.
I wanted to convince you what I said. Are you convinced yourself? Because
I think I'm convinced of the fact that we would require a very large mass transfer rate for that, which is, I think it's not possible in the CB disk.
I agree with that. like confirmation, yes. I agree with what I wrote. I mean, it's still very good.
So what I would like to do is, using this risk and stability model, I would like to test this hypothesis that the recurrent nova could be triggered by this dwarf nova outburst, or probably the light curves that are observed during this recurrent nova can be modeled by this dwarf nova disk instability model for this dwarf nova outburst, and possibly we could, if we could confirm that these recurrent nova could be the progenitors for type 1 supernova.
You should maybe mention who is the author of this hypothesis.
Sure. But I recently came across so there are other hypotheses saying that the disk, since this recurrent nova is usually very close to the Chandrasekhar limit, the mass of the Vaibhav is close to the Chandrasekhar limit, so probably there are other hypotheses saying that the thermal nuclear runaways and like helium flashes and other stuff like that could also make this recurrent nova objects lead to the supernova. So
there's a paper by Kink and Pringle that claimed that the outburst of RS of Yuki is not a thermonuclear outburst but a dwarf nova type of outburst, which is obviously not true because it's a super soft source. I mean, it's an Eddington super soft source, clearly. There is thermonuclear burning. However, the hypothesis that the dwarf nova type of outburst trigger a recurrent nova is something we are testing.
Can I just ask it?
Sure.
So you just said that, Jean-Pierre said, that that in large disks, you would expect the outburst to be more or less always inside out. Is that right?
Yes.
So in which case, why, if that's the case, why does one have to even simulate large disks? Why not, if the outburst always starts in the middle?
But in that case, we would have precursors to this large outburst. So the outburst could extend up to 10 to the power, I think very near to the outer edge. So if that's the case, then it would sweep in so much mass that it could trigger the
Okay, so it's like you need to know how far out it goes
yes.
in order to figure out
so
how big it is.
True.
I have a question also that maybe I'm wrong. The recurrent building were associated with symbiotics. So you look like red giants in elliptical eccentric orbits.
Not all of them.
So some of them have circular orbits with the mass transfer
T-pix. Although that's not a good example.
I think RS Opuk and there's other system which has red giant as a
USCO.
So I'm also slightly confused about the supernova progenitors, because my understanding from a large group here is that when you have recurrent novas, it's hard to build up enough mass to actually get to the Chandrasekhar limit, because every nova you're just you're exploding off the whole surface, and it's not clear if you can ever actually accumulate mass over time. Like, sure, you accumulate that shell, and then you blast it off. You keep on doing that.
True, true. That would require a very large recurrence time scale, if that's the case, right? But regardless of your QP, we observe that it's the recurrent time is around 10 to 20 years. And also, if the mass accretion rate happens in a very particular limit, during which there could be a steady hydrogen burning, then this is possible. So we have to make sure that the mass accretion rate at the inner edge is consistent with that limit from the literature, and also from which we could also plausibly estimate how much mass transfer rates we are interested in, which I think it would confine the mass transfer rate in our models.
Just to the more general point, so observationally, that statement about whether all the mass you accrete in nova in between nova eruptions is blown off in novae, observationally, I think that's highly controversial. Nobody knows the answer to that. Theoretically, the claim is that if you look at nova models, that's true for the vast majority of them, but not for the recurrent novae. So basically, there's a relationship between M ejected over M created, and it's such that you get net mass gain for exactly the parameter regime that these are in. So a high mass, high white dwarf mass, high M dot is the only regime we can accrete, net accrete. Whether that's enough and whether it's observed.
So what's happening with this, the one that recurs on time scales of a year? So.
Well, allegedly,
it's been proposed. It must be losing more than it's gaining because the accretion rate is strong enough in 1 year.
No, I think that's been suggested as one of the type 1a progenitors potentially.
Is it so hot?
Theory would say it's got to be super close to Chandrasekhar and super high accreting to do this. Is right.
We have a little problem with our associated because the uncertainty of the distance is a factor of 3, depends who you read, and Gaia gives, as John already discovered, the position, but not the parallax. So a factor of 3, as you understand,
it will in a year or two.
It will, but not yet.
It's a problem.
Okay, so later we would also try to model the outburst of this super Eddington extra transients using this model. But currently I'm concentrating only on this RSOQT system because in Alexander's paper, as mentioned by John Fair, so it has been studied only for this particular system. So first, my first goal is to adapt the same parameters and for the system and then compare the results with theirs the idea was quite interesting, but probably they have made some very crude approximations while solving the vertical structures, and so which affects the S curves, and then it would lead to underestimation or overestimation of the sigma max, sigma minimum, thereby affecting their results in estimating the recurrence period. So my first goal would be to study how what would be the recurrence time scales and how the risk instability model could probably trigger the supernova or not. So the mass of the white dwarf is estimated to be around 1.35 to 1.37 solar mass, and then the orbital period is around roughly 460 days, so it's pretty large. And
can I just say that, just in the interest of full disclosure here, that these white dwarf masses, I'm sure, all come from Hachisu and Kato's modeling of the nova light curves, and they always, for virtually every system they've ever modeled, get masses of around 1.4 or something. Now that, I shouldn't say that's completely crazy, because it could be a selection effect. You see the ones that erupt off and then have whatever right properties. But I think nobody in their right mind should take that literally too.
So there are no dynamical masses?
No. For most of these, there isn't. USCO is an exception. USCO has a half decent mass measurement, which is consistent with high, where that means, like, I don't know, 1.2 plus or minus 0.3.
It's really not known to 2 or 3 decimal places.
It's known to 1, I think.
So
not one significant figure.
What is the difficulty?
Sorry?
What is the difficulty in getting that?
Well, for one thing, these things have some of these have periods of like 500 days, so that's not good. And see, and just seeing lines from everything that you need to see is incredibly hard, and knowing where they come from.
And you also must know the information anyway.
Anyway, so.
Does the dwarf nova modeling know about Jurassic mass?
Dwarf nova modeling? Well, you should ask him, but I don't, not really, no.
So then, how would...
No, not dwarf nova.
Oh, the nova, okay.
So Hutchison and Carthy will model the nova eruptions of these systems.
Oh, okay.
So they model a light curves of that, and those depend very strongly on the mass. But anyway, yeah, so don't take these too seriously.
Yeah, I was just going to this paper especially to get an estimate of the mass transference, because they say that above some critical limit, the optical thick lens would be dominant, and yeah, just for that I was referring to this paper. So yes, as I said, I would be interested mostly in the system family, and so the recurrence timescale for the system is around 10 to 20 years. And as I showed, the white dwarf mass is estimated to be around 1.35 solar mass, and the orbital appearance so. And for this mass, the white dwarf radius would be around 10 to the power 8 centimeters. So, as Professor Hamid has already discussed about the score initially, so to put it very simply, what we do is we assume the disk to be geometrically thin, so we can solve the radian and the vertical structure separately. So we take in the huge parameter space for temperature, radius, and surface density, which would be which are appropriate for this case, and then we solve the vertical structure and then try to find the heating and cooling rates from this, then plug it into the time dependent radial disk, and then solve for the evaluation of this radial. And these are the S curves for 10 to the power 10 centimeters and 10 to the power 11 centimeters, and this is the 10 to the power 12 centimeters. The red dashed line is for 0.1 alpha value, and the dotted one is alpha cold for 0.01. So, and yes, we could see slight wiggles over here, which are not, which generally doesn't correspond to, doesn't lead to any outburst. This is the main unstable branch.
But the scary thing here, so you say that, so maybe I'm misunderstanding, the dashed curve is the low alpha curve?
The dotted one is the low alpha one. So which so the dotted one is, if you look at the particular one, the dotted one is the alpha cold one, and the dashed one is the alpha hot. Oh. So we assume that during the outburst, it makes a transition to the.
Yeah, no,
the
yeah, high. I got it wrong.
And this movie, I showed it already. So should I skip this because of the time constraint? I think.
I don't think we're going to be able to squeeze two more people in. So what I would suggest, especially as I have to go back to the department and talk for our meeting, I would like to hear your presentations, that we postpone them until next week, if you guys are willing.
That's fine.
You're not going to hate.
We want you to listen to it.
Okay. So why don't we just finish with your
show? Sure. So as I showed you earlier, these are the properties for these parameters. And I must mention that this is a very huge mass transfer rate. I'm not aiming for this in order to compare to the observational values, because I think this is too much for CV disk.
So what, just as a reminder, what's that again in units of?
This is in 9 into 10 to the power 20 grams per second, okay. The mass transfer rate.
Which in per
yes,
year?
Yes, it would be 10 to the power minus 6 solar mass per year. I think 19 is...
6 by 10 of the 20.
Yes, 19 grams per second is around 10 to the power minus 6, so 20 would be minus 5 solar mass per year.
So that's super adequate.
Yes, that's too much. But I just got this because anyways, the steady, I have to lower it down from the steady mass transfer rate, so steady value. So. But well, if the mass transfer is too high, then we get very large recurrence time scales for these alpha parameters. And thing is that the delay over here, I think, is probably because there is too much mass in the outer part of the disk. So the front has a difficulty in propagating further out. So that would lead to these delays over here. And even this mass transfer rate at the inner edge is too much. It's I think, above the Eddington limit for this one solar mass wide. Well, for one solar mass wide dwarf, it's around 5 into 10 to the power 20 grams per second, which is yes, well above that. So, in summary, we do get a huge deposition of this mass onto this white dwarf, but before that could happen, it could probably trigger the thermonuclear runaway. So probably these mass transfer rates at the inner injector are not appropriate. But still, we need to increase the recurrence period because according to the literature, it's between 10 to 20, something around 18 years. So, and one possible solution would be to reduce the alpha value and also to truncate the disk at larger radii so that we could get larger recurrence time. But before that, I'm also trying to adapt the parameters for alpha cold, alpha hot, and the truncation of the disk as in mentioned in Alexander's paper. In just to compare our results with this.
One question: would you expect the NOVA to clear out the disk and then have to reform the disk from scratch?
It may happen, but it depends. I think it's because if you have this helium NOVA, I think probably they won't be as efficient as the hydrogen one would be.
I think in our result, I think that's been discussed in the literature and still not clear.
Yes.
So there's. People are looking for like the signal, like a line signature from a disk as soon as possible after eruption. But I don't think it's clear how long it takes. It's an excellent question because it really affects like how quickly after an eruption should you start seeing outbursts again.
But I thought that most of the outbursts were seen in Chicken or something like this soon after the end of the eruption.
The 1918.
Yeah,
well, I can't remember how. I don't remember that.
You remember that, you know, it picked up again.
So that's a minimum limit on how long it takes to reform. But I think whether it's completely gone.
The time scale is 20 years, so it's you need to have the disk to be rebuilt a couple of years after the definition. I mean, depending on whether you can know where the whole disk lasts or not. Probably not because you don't have enough. I would imagine you don't have quite the right amount of energy to do that. But it depends again on the disk mass and
the mass transfer.
So in RSOF, is there direct evidence via line profiles or whatever for an actual accretion disk at any time? I mean, do we see double peak line profiles or anything like that? Because I mean, that is in fact, RSOF is a system that's a symbiotic, isn't it?
Yes.
Yes.
So I mean, do we know it's not wind accretion?
Yeah, I was going to ask that. We sure it's.
We don't know the disk. I mean, depending on the distance, it is the giant either fills half its Roche lobe or it fills its Roche lobe completely.
I'm not sure about the RSOPH because I haven't. Read about that, but I knew that there are other systems for which the wind accretion has been quite significantly noticed, like around 1,000 kilometers per second wind sometimes. Because if the mass transfer rate is above this critical value, then definitely there will be a huge amount of optical electric winds from the white dwarf. So.
I would imagine also that, I mean, the reason I ask partly is because I guess even if you had Roche lobe overflow by a strong wind from a donor, so you might even get sort of some disk accretion, some wind accretion, and also if in pure wind accretion, you can still make a disk potentially depending on the angle momentum balance and so on, but that's a bloody messy process as I understand it. So, you know, do we know that one can apply these sort of things to, well, let me rephrase it. Are there systems for which we're sort of confident that we can apply standard 1D Borg-Nova models? And that should be more or less okay because we think it's mostly just plain old Roche lobe overflow. Or are we just guessing?
Wait. I don't understand.
The question is how certain are you that in systems like this you're really looking at a mostly pure Roche lobe overflow?
Assuming it is an accretion disk.
Well, but
in a system with 400 something hours, it extends where it's supposed to extend. By the law of Newtonian mechanics, it is unstable to work on about stability. It is a recurrent nova.
Even if accretion was violated, the disk would also fall.
It might, but I guess I'm wondering whether those disks really I've seen some old simulations of those kind of disks, and they do not tend to look like normal disks, as far as I thought. Because it's just a messy process, like really messy.
But if it wasn't in a disk, then wouldn't it be, you know, sort of like a great windfall or something like that, and you'd have completely different time scales?
I mean, so these...
Right, I mean, disks give you slow time scales.
But this, I think there is a paper by King, where they observe, they mentioned that...
You were referring to the Christian part of the But this one, I mean, this particular source is largely clean in structure.
Yeah, I mean, it suggests that that might be a
so, I think, but this, a jet has been observed for this particular source, right? Which probably suggests that if there is a thermal nuclear runaway, then it would destroy the inner parts of the disk, and I don't know how the jet could be powered.
Well, I'm not yet. I'm totally confident so, that you have a thermonuclear runaway from a nova eruption. I mean, yeah, we know this thing is a nova eruption, but I'm guessing what I'm wondering is just whether or not while it's not erupting, is it fair to the model like a normal dwarf nova or not?
Can I ask a question about the thermal? So the you have locally have the Linus cycle, like, obvious. Then you put it together into one big global one.
Yes.
Do you have to do anything particular to couple the radii, or is it just the n dot variations that naturally couple the radii? Do you have to put conduction flux in, or anything else like that, or you just let the change, the local changes in n dot
yes.
propagate globally? That's all you need to do.
Yes. Okay.
So the disk. Thin disk.
Okay.
So yeah. The radius is actually decoupled from the.
There is, however, a radial flux. Which is due to advection in particular, and which is due to also to radiation.
So that has to be explicitly.
That has to be included. It's it affects, as a matter of fact, the shape of the transition flow between the hot and the cold powder. It twists, and the most probably, I would imagine that the speed of the front is not so much affected by these details, because if you make it thinner, then you if you make the conduction, the radial flux less, then it would affect the shape of the front and therefore change the gradient and make the velocity. That's the reason why you find that the velocity of the front is of the order, for example, of the sound speed time alpha, which is something which is more general.
So that's very robust.
Yeah, I would imagine that.
That couldn't
even
be
the details might vary.
I'm wondering if, for example, recurrence period issue could be some function of that physics.
No, because the recurrence time is determined by the mass, which is accreted, the ratio of the accretion rate and the mass, which is accreted in the 1 hour plus, and this is probably very pretty much robust.
I think it's more dependent on the alpha value, which determines how at what time the viscous, I mean, that mass would be accreted more. Because I think I also find that I keep trying for this other mass transfer rates, but by decreasing the mass transfer rate, the recurrence period is not changing much in particular case of this large disk.
So if there's some non trivial behavior alpha, for example, around this transition, that could potentially.
Somebody else other than Omar has to be in charge now.
Well, no, we're going to sit here until he comes back.
Thank you both.